good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot, Wakunjahade, which means distant thunder. And Robert Pilot's my colonized name, and we discuss Native and Native-centric news from all over Turtle Island. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Native Roots Trading Post, located at 700 Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis in the Old Dayton's building. We're opening on November 18th, Native Supporting Natives.
Wow, that was cool. Hey, I should have you do that again because I had the mute button on. You want to do that again?
I think I got it in, but I can do it again for you.
We just want to double up.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Native Roots Trading Post. We're opening on November 18th and will be located at 700 Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis inside the Dayton's building. Natives supporting natives in business and art.
That's big news, Pini Gigi. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of product coming in from Native artists all over Turtle Island, and so we're really stoked. And mm-hmm. Wendy and I are just starting to rev up, this is when we start fighting, so we're going to be, if you guys want to come down and see us at the store,
we'll be duking it out.
We'll be on one, or either that or we'll be on one side of the store and you'll be on the other side of the
store. That's how it works best.
Awesome. Hey, what we... as you know, we do the Native news here, and I'm Ho-Chunk, and we have this young warrior do news you don't hear anywhere else, really, in the whole country here, and we're just really pleased to have Ogama with the news. Welcome.
Hi, Anim Bujo, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganiwakwe. I'm a member of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota, and as always, I have some news for you here on Native Roots Radio. Just a reminder, if you're following the Stop Line 3 news, that Camp McGeezy is now McGeezy Will Fly on their social media, and they are regularly posting about support that they need. So make sure to check out McGeezy Will Fly on Facebook, Twitter, wherever you like to consume your social media, and also to make sure that you're supporting Mr. Ron Turney on GoFundMe. Make sure to search Ron Turney on GoFundMe. He does need support right now to continue his monitoring of the Line 3 aquifer breaches and other problems caused by the construction of the Line 3 pipeline here in Minnesota. We really do need his work and ask that you support him at this time if you can, as well as Camp McGeezy. As far as the Stop Line 5 goes, things are still kind of stalled out on Stop Line 5, although the Biden administration's officials earlier this week did say that they may be open to discussing Line 5, but haven't made any sort of promises. So we'll kind of be watching and waiting to see what happens on the Line 5 front, as well as the continuation of the Line 3 front here in Minnesota. We do want to remind everybody that the White Earth Nation did file an order, a Rights of Nature case against the Minnesota DNR on behalf of Manuman or Wild Rice, and that case is still active. We'll probably give some more updates on that coming to either this week or next week.
Something happened there. I don't know what's going on. So,
is my audio okay?
No, not at all.
Nope. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. You might want to flip over to your headset on StreamYard.
It sounds like little Martians are in your microphone there, Ogama.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens. You know, we're all made out of electrical beans. And so when we're stressed and freaking out, stuff happens to my computers all the time.
Still not any better, is it?
No, not at all.
Interesting.
So, yeah. It's technology. So I was going to say something, but maybe we should start the show over.
Yeah. Today's Veterans Day.
Yes. Thank you, Pini Gigi.
Let's talk about your dad was a veteran.
I was just going to say that the original Bob Pilot was in the Army Air Corps, it was called. And that was the prequel to the Air Force from 1943 to 45. And then what he did, and I didn't realize this because that came around a lot later, what he did was he – he was in the reserves. So he loved to fly, being a pilot. Mm-hmm. And so he flew all the time with his GI Bill. And, you know, he was carefree, so he didn't buy a business or a house. He did it on flying lessons. Him and his brother bought a plane. But in the meantime, which really freaked me out because for some reason I always thought the Korean War was like, you know, a few years after World War II. But he was called back in the service 9 years later after World War II.
Wow.
And he didn't go, of course, to the front lines or anything. He was protecting San Diego from the Koreans, mm-hmm. or North Korea. Mm-hmm. That was a joke, by the way. But he still was away from his wife, mm-hmm. his house, his family, his mm-hmm. job. And as soon as he got done with that gig, he got out as soon as he could. But he was an awesome dude. And he was one of those people that never really talked about World War II. And I think back then they came from like small towns. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't know their 4-block radius was mm-hmm. their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Their 4-block radius was their life. And, you know, they were put in a position in World War II to be worldly. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, I don't know if it was overwhelming, but it was something that, you know, they never really boasted about themselves, and they really kept to themselves and the things that they saw. Because I know a lot of people came back with post before, well, it was called PTSD. shell shock.
Yeah, they called it shell shock back then, yeah.
And he was in planes bombing Germany, and but, you know, he was in those B-17s with that. Back in those days, in the war, were shot down really easy. Mm-hmm. So if you completed 23 missions, you were sent home. And that sometimes would take, you know, 2 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in the very beginning of the war, when it started in 1941, nobody made it back. I mean, nobody completed 23 missions. Mm-hmm. I think one of the I can't remember what the Mighty 8 Air Force, and I can't remember what one of the first planes that made our first teams, because they had, you know, all the pilot, co-pilot, bombardier, and the turret gunners and the gunners inside. They were all one team, so they all flew the same mission. So it was really interesting. It was the best time of his life, though, he always said, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that means.
Whatever happened to the airplane that he bought with his brother?
Do you know the story?
I have a feeling I know the story. As soon as you tell me, I'm going to say that's right.
I've seen beautiful pictures of this plane and him and his older brother, Uncle John. A windstorm blew it over, and they didn't have insurance in those days, and they couldn't afford to buy another plane.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember you were just telling me a story about your father's leather jacket he got from the service.
Yeah, definitely. It fell off. It fell apart. He wore it all the time. It was one of those leather, brown leather Army Air Force.
Like a fighter jacket.
Or flight jacket.
Yep. Yeah.
Flight jacket.
But he was very proud to wear that jacket.
Wore it all the time. You see pictures of him, you know, when he was hunting and things, he always had it on. And so it was – we missed the original Robert Pilot, and mm-hmm. he was a quiet giant, and he was one of the people that were whisked into World War II – like so many young people. I mean, you look at that, they get drafted when they were 18. And mm-hmm. do you remember when you were 18? It was like, mm-hmm. yeah, what's going on? Nothing, mm-hmm. didn't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, hey, you know, we're opening up a store and we're supporting Native artists mm-hmm. all over Turtle Island. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And it's coming up soon, and it's going to be awesome. And I think I was interviewed today, too, and one of the things that were really...
Who interviewed you?
I was interviewed by a local...
Okay.
But I was interviewed today, and I had a thought there.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, let's go to the next... you're listening to Native Roots Radio present I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break with Robert Lilligren.
Hey Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
In every deliberation, we must consider that the impact of the seventh generation, great law of the Iroquois Nation. When it comes to making important decisions, indigenous people have always thought seven generations ahead as a way to ensure our survival as people. Getting the COVID vaccine protects you and your family and future generations. Help protect the herd by getting vaccinated today. This message is brought to you by McGinnis Communications and Minnesota Department of Health.
For too long, American Indian tribes have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation in Indian country. They have worked hand-in-hand with tribes to implement the Tribal Law and Order Act, fighting against diminishment of tribal lands and natural resources, and improving public safety on reservations. The Robbins Kaplan American Indian Law and Policy Practice serves tribes and individuals on commercial, government investigations, agency and tribal boundary disputes, as well as personal injury. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purdon, their American Indian Law and Policy Practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. If you or your tribe are facing legal issues, contact RobbinsKaplan.com or call toll-free at 1-800-553-9910.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hare.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Director of Native American Community Development Institute, NADCI, and I got to get that straight because I keep on calling Native American Community Clinic NADCI, and let's just say Wendy, Dr. Stately wasn't on this week. No, I'm just kidding. So we have Robert Lilligren, and we just like to talk about things that are going on all around. There's a lot of cool things happening in Minneapolis and national, and he's our national guy too. But it's just a fun conversation. Welcome, Robert Lilligren.
Yeah, bonjour, everyone. Thanks for having me. Nice to see you, Robert, Wendy, Ogama.
Yeah, Pini Gigi. So what's going on? I had an opportunity to drive by that Courtney's great art put up there at the Wall of Forgotten Natives. I just want to say tell you that it's beautiful, just awesome.
Yeah, that is something. I mean, it's something on so many levels, right? I mean, it's incredibly authentic work. You know Courtney Cochran, I know her. She is so truly embedded in the community. She engaged, I bet it's in the hundreds of people, in creating what's called Never Homeless Before 1492. And it's panels that spell that out, Never Homeless Before 1492. They're on a chain link fence around the site of the Wall of Forgotten Natives, this massive homeless encampment that popped up in the summer of 2018, right there in the American Indian Cultural Corridor in South Minneapolis. And so the piece is so authentic. It comments on what contributes to our unsheltered relatives. But to me, I got to tell you guys, one of the things that just really amazes me is that the piece was funded by MnDOT. And MnDOT partnered with our organization so we could hire Courtney to do that incredible, incredible work.
Yeah, it is. And Wendy and I, and many, 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 many other people, when the call came out, brought supplies over and over again. And, it was heart, heart-shaking to see our relatives and the people in the community in that predicament.
Yeah, it was. And it was quite a thing, you know, out here in the community. And when the camp first started to grow and was first established, when the wall was first established, it was almost exclusively Native people. And throughout its whole life, it was predominantly Native people, although it got a little more diverse as things went on. It grew to about 200 tents.
Yeah.
And for folks that haven't been there, it's on this little strip of Minnesota Department of Transportation right away, next to a ramp going onto a highway. And it's not a fit place for people to be living, right? And it was, you know, as Courtney says, you know, it's ironic that Native people are homeless in our own lands, right?
Right.
So the amazing thing about the Wall of Forgotten Natives, well, a couple of things. One was how visible it was right yeah. next to Highway 55 or Hiawatha, right next to our light rail. So literally tens and tens of thousands of people saw it every day. Mm-hmm. And it changed the conversation, right? Suddenly people that were invisible became painfully visible. And it still is changing the conversation. So, yeah, it's amazing. And the other piece that I think emerged from this was the strong community that came together. Like you said, you guys were there. Pretty much everyone was there. People were coming down from reservations and helping out. And the Native organizations here in the Twin Cities really stepped up because nobody else was stepping up.
Right.
And those who you would think would be responsible, government, public sector, and others. And so especially for the beginning, we were kind of on our own. And man, did we, you know, redirected resources that we didn't really have to make sure that we were taking care of our relatives. And it was a game changer. And it's something to really recognize that with a work like Courtney's Never Homeless Before 1492.
Right. And I think, there was maybe a little pushback on how it was going to come about, but I think she got pretty much what she wanted to. Is that correct? Was that the
you know process? That yeah kind of you know the when MnDOT posted this RFP for this work, this request for proposal, and you know we just seemed our organization seemed like a natural to respond, and in dialogue with MnDOT from the leadership level. You know, all the way through, we were clear. They wanted a community perspective. They wanted community involvement and engagement on this piece. And I really think they got an incredible value in Courtney's work. But and we told them, we said, you know, if we're really having an authentic conversation with community, we're going to hear things that aren't that pleasant to hear. You know, you're going to hear things that aren't about MnDOT that might not be that pleasant. And they were, you know, assured us that they understood. And then as the piece came into being and even the phrase never homeless before 1492, which is really common in our community and the organization, American Indian Community Development Corporation, Mike Gosey's organization had that printed on shirts, you know, and so it's a really common phrase, but MnDOT got a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And there was some communication, you know, from the staff level that said, oh, we can't put that up there. But through dialogue, you know, they understood what we were doing, what it meant, and they were supportive in the end. And then to have a sensitive artist like Courtney, you know, she's very aware of how triggering this can be for Native people and non-Native people, you know, the conditions that contribute to unsheltered Native people. And so she really was deliberate about how she put the piece together so that it's not too painful, but it's authentic enough that it'll prompt more conversation.
Yeah. Just one last thing about Courtney. I know she was in film school and was doing a documentary and was living there helping all the time. So that was a perfect person to have as your artist there because she was part of the whole community there.
She really, really was. And she lived at the wall. She built some really authentic relationships. She was really helping people more one-on-one. And then in a non-extractive way, got some of that on film and some footage. And she's been putting together this documentary. I've seen a couple iterations of it. She wants to have it finalized by the end of the year and to have it kind of come out in conjunction with the piece, Never Homeless Before 1492. But yeah, a really amazing person, Courtney Cochran.
Yeah, and just one last thing before we move on. I picture and seen pictures in my mind with all those tents and steam coming from them in the morning and with fires going on and a couple big teepees there. I mean, yeah. It was interesting in a way where Standing Rock was interesting, but that it brought community together.
Yep. I think it's one of those pivotal moments, you know, and I get an opportunity to talk to a lot of non-Native people and kind of educate them about the contemporary Native condition and things. And I always do a quick history. And then, you know, 1968, the founding of AIM right here, you know, is a pivotal moment. And then Standing Rock, I always lift that up. And then Scaffold here, the sculpture in the Walker Arts Sculpture Garden, and then the wall. And I always bring those up as sort of pivotal moments of community building.
Right.
You know, I remember when we were down there a few times, Robert, you know, I sat with some of the people there who had dogs because I was really interested to find out, you know, how it was to be homeless and have a dog and what the dog meant to them. And it was really interested to in talking to these people that the dog meant everything to them. And a lot of them would even turn down housing because the housing wouldn't accept the pet and they'd rather sleep in the street with the dog. And how loyal they were and how they would feed the dog before they would even eat. And it went on and on. Even I think I talked to at least three different people who had dogs and they all said the same thing. And it was just really heartbreaking to me. And I think that the shelters need to be able to let their dogs come with them so that they could have housing. So that's right. All I want to say about that.
Nope, that pets were a huge barrier to people going into shelter. And there was kind of this systemic belief, right, that, oh, we're offering you shelter. Why won't you go? Well, if I have to go without my pet, I'm not going to go. If I have to go without my partner, I'm not going to go. If it's going to separate our family, I'm not going to go. So there is assumptions on the side of the system that any roof over your head is better than none. And then there were really, really powerful statements like you just outlined, Wendy, that, you know, no, that's not the fact. Being together with my pet, my family, my partner, those are priorities. And so we are seeing shelter options develop that do allow for, that are more permissive, that do allow for pets, allow for families to stay together, partners to stay together, but it's slow change.
Yeah, you know, one of the things too, Robert and Wendy, we got a break coming up here, but I have something else to say about that, but my mind's going on me today.
Worried about you, Robert.
Oh, that's okay. He's been working really, really hard, and he's got like literally 20 million things on his brain right now. And
when you have a pea-sized brain, that's hard to fit 20 million things on there. Yeah. Well, Robert, you got another time? Time for a segment? See, I can't even put together.
Sure.
Yes. You have time for another segment.
Thank you, gosh. Thank you, Wendy.
I understood, Wendy.
Hey, we'll be right.
I have a pea-sized brain too, so that helps.
No. We'll be right back. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake.
Stay with us. For too long, American Indian tribes have faced a competitive disadvantage when litigating against powerful forces. With its American Indian Law and Policy Practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation in Indian Country. They have worked hand-in-hand with tribes to implement the Tribal Law and Order Act, fighting against diminishment of tribal lands and natural resources, and improving public safety on reservations. The Robbins Kaplan American Indian Law and Policy Practice serves tribes and individuals on commercial, government investigations, agency and tribal boundary disputes, as well as personal injury. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purdon, their American Indian Law and Policy Practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. If you or your tribe are facing legal issues, contact RobbinsKaplan.com or call toll-free at 1-800-553-9910.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
I'm John Peterson of Ferndale Market, and I'm the third generation to grow turkeys on our family farm in Cannon Falls. We've grown them the same way since 1939, free range and without antibiotics. We're proud of the way our turkey tastes naturally, so we never add fillers or basting solutions, just 100% pure turkey. And we're proud to remain an independent family farm. Looking for an extra special addition to this year's Thanksgiving feast? Our fresh, never frozen turkeys remove the hassle of thawing and can be picked up just days before your celebration. Available at natural food stores across the region. Reserve your fresh, free-range Thanksgiving turkey for pickup at our store right on our farm in scenic Cannon Falls or at one of our retail partners. For more information on finding our Ferndale Market Thanksgiving turkey near you, visit us at ferndalemarket.com. That's ferndalemarket.com. Thank you for your support of local foods and farmers. We'll hope to see you at Ferndale Market soon. FerndaleMarket.com.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lulia. Expect a rain and snow mix overnight with a low of 33, then more rain and snow mix on Friday with a high of 38.
No one has more in-stock appliances to choose from than Warner Stellion, now with an extra 5% savings. Plus, open a Warner's card to earn up to a $100 bonus, then pay no interest for 18 months. Shop our 10 Minnesota stores or online at warnerstellion.com.
Wake up with your favorite sexy liberal, me, Stephanie Miller, every weekday morning from 8 to 11 right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Pini Gigi. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Director of Native American Community Development Institute in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis. And I just want to kind of finish this up because I remember what I was going to say. Wendy helped me. she started sounding stuff out, and you said this, and we just went through this whole thing. So, you know, one of the things that I think that has been figured out since the Wall of Forgotten Natives is that people need a secure place. If you're in a big camp like that, or if you're going, not so much the camp, I meant.
Like a shelter.
Thank
right?
you. And they're afraid to get stuff stolen. And I think you mentioned Mike Gozzi, I know his organization now has big lockers for them, and they can keep stuff secure, and that's huge.
Like each bed has their own locker, and they get to lock their stuff up at the end of the night. In the clinic that I worked at, we had a large homeless population, and that was one of their biggest things. My backpack got stolen. My meds, I don't have any more medication because the meds were in my backpack. So it's
right.
really
medications, really ID, all
yeah.
of that.
Yeah. It's really hard. The other thing is too that, there's some people out there who believe that people who are only sober are deserving of housing. And I just think that that is just such a, you know, so wrong. And that everybody, no matter if they drink or smoke or whatever they do, everyone deserves, you know, a shelter and a warm place to be. So I just want to say that too. And there are some shelters out there who require you to be sober, and it is a deterrent to so many people, and it's just not going to happen in their life. So,
and I think we learned a lot during this, Robert.
Agree. And so, Wendy, what you're talking about, they call harm reduction model, right? It's not a requirement that you be not using to access shelter and services. And I think you're right, Robert, since the Wall of Forgotten Natives, at least in this region, there's really been a willingness to innovate, to collaborate in different ways. You know, we talked about Mike Gozy at American Indian Community Development Corporation. Mike was just saying the other day, it looks like he's going to open up his overnight drop-in center, which was something that he innovated last year. He, a couple other organizations, Minnesota Indian Men's Resource Center as well, where they're not shelters, because if something's a shelter, it has a much higher regulatory threshold, licensing and things like that. But if it's a drop-in center that have chairs that people can recline in and stay warm and not freeze to death and have a place to sleep, they can operate with much lower sort of regulatory oversight. So I'm sure we'll see these opening up as the weather gets cold again. And it's not a perfect solution at all, but at least it's keeping people alive.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, I just celebrated, and I don't want to blow my own horn, but I just celebrated 37 years of continuous sobriety. And
I saw that. Congratulations.
Pinigigi. I usually celebrate it for a whole month, but it's Native American Heritage Month, too. So it's a double celebration. But you just don't know, too, when it comes to who's going to be sober. That's the creator picks the person or helps the person. The smartest person in the world, a lot of times doesn't sober up. So that's how I've made it to 37 years, Wendy.
Well, and our friend, Dr. Anthony Bailey, says it really beautifully. You know, he said, if someone dies, they're never going to get sober. Right. And so keeping people alive, so at least they have the opportunity to make different choices in the future, you know, especially as it gets cold here, they know that's a priority. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk a little bit of – let's switch gears here. But I think that kind of turned into something really important, especially with the snow coming and getting really cold, that our relatives are still homeless and still struggling. We've learned a lot, but we have a lot more to learn.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. So what else is going on in Minneapolis and nationally that you want to share with us?
Well, one kind of big thing that's happening here in the Twin Cities, a week from today, it's an event called Native Rise, and mm-hmm. I'm guessing you might know something about it. You might even be going, Robert, for all I know.
But I signed up for it. I've been on Maggie Lorenz's table, I think. But
that's
our opening of our store too. So I'm going to be juggling, and
a good place to plug your store. You know, Maggie's going to be presenting too on the Lower Failing Creek Wacom Teepee Project.
Oh.
So that'll be cool. But Dr. Joe Hobot from the American Indian OIC here and on the American Indian Cultural Corridor kind of has led this. I think, is this the third or the fourth? Third, I think, Native Rise. And it's about political empowerment. It's about collaboration amongst the urban Indian organizations. And we host an event. Sean Sherman, the sous chef, is going to be the keynote speaker. Peggy Flanagan, my whiter sister and our lieutenant governor, will be there and speak as well. And it's an opportunity to bring legislators, other elected officials, resource holders, corporate world, philanthropy together and kind of educate them about what's going on and about what we're up to here. And so that's next Thursday, which is super exciting. And it's at the
International Market Square, isn't it?
The Intercontinental Hotel in St. Paul, which is Native owned. It's in the last and enterprise. And so
I think that's where it was last time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Exactly. That exact same space, actually. In that exact
I wasn't invited the last time, but I crashed. No, I'm just kidding. I was at the last one.
Oh, right.
I think Clyde did the opening prayer, too. at the last one.
I think you're right. And
but I don't know if that was that I don't know because of COVID or what, if that was 2 years ago or 1 year. I'm all confused with.
Yeah. It was at least 2 years ago, and it hasn't been an annual event. Yeah. It's been, you know, a little more spread out, a little more paced, but it's something major. And we just had a meeting today where we were talking about it amongst the participating organization heads, and the response has been great. I mean, it's been a robust response. And so we're gearing up, and so yeah, and you should come plug your market for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Well, one of the things too that we're trying to do at the market, and Wendy and I and Ogama, and we have a James Allen helping with us too, and his artistic people, is really amplify and mainstream what Native artists are and what they do and what isn't Native artists. Because I know I've picked up some cool stuff that looks really Native, and it's, you know, made in China. And and people are shocked to hear the stories that we talked about where people that bead always make a little mistake somewhere in there, so they know that it's – and I'm, you know, educating our white relatives and that you need to ask who made this when you buy stuff from people. Yeah. And if they can't tell you, it's just like, it's almost like.
Well, you want to buy authentic stuff and you want to support those artists. So you want to know who makes them.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Exactly.
So how's the score going, Robert? Are y'all set?
Well, Wendy and I are still married at this point. No, so far. It's going really well. We got about 12 artists, and what's going to happen is probably we're going to be getting another 12, because once they sell out their stuff, we'll have to rotate new people in. So that's been the process too. And you know, and helping our relatives that are artists that maybe are more concerned about art, which they should be, and talk about how the business world works too, and help them with maneuvering that is really been what we've been really doing, and finding out that there's a need out there. So that's the thing we've been guiding a lot of artists, and how this works and how it can work and how we can amplify their voice.
I love it. And you've inspired us at NACD as well. And we've had kind of opportunities, kind of pop-up markets and things. And it takes a lot of capacity as you're learning, you know. And but there's just so much opportunity out there to do all of those things, those good things you were just talking about. And so we're going to start. We're going to start small. We're going to have a little Christmas market in our gallery this year. And we want to get into more sort of retail opportunities. And so we're going to build out sort of an ability, the capacity to be pop-up markets, to be part of pop-up markets and things. So,
and you guys do that on Thursdays during the summer too. And I think that's inspiring too. And I really had a lot of momentum, I believe, before COVID. And now it's just come back. So that's always exciting too.
That's our Four Sisters Farmers Market. Yeah. And it's been great. It really came back. It was a really great year this year.
Yep.
And we actually had it last year, even with COVID, we had super strict protocols. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't quite as busy, but this year it was a good year. It just closed up, 2 weeks ago for the season.
And what's going on with Rise, and also what you're doing and what we're trying to do, it's just to amplify. And what this radio show tries to do is amplify the Native voice all over Turtle Island and educate our allies, which listen to this show and support the show. So that's what we're trying to do in downtown Minneapolis, and that's what you guys do great on Franklin Avenue.
Oh, you're so kind. Yeah, and another initiative, again, Dr. Joe Hobart at the American Indian OIC is leading it. Yeah, we're calling it the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative. And it's another sort of political movement to bring more capital into the community. You know, we have all these incredible organizations, Native American Community Clinic, Indian Center, you know, Minnesota Indians Resource Center, Indigenous Peoples Task Force. We have these aging facilities that are underinvested in. And so we need an infusion of capital. And so I think there are now 16 organizations working together to help bring more capital directly into the urban Indian community. And it's the same organizations that are part of Native Rise event. Mm-hmm. It's major. It's flexing, you know, flexing the muscle.
No, and it is. And I think that's where I think our generation and the generation after us is really working on is collaboration. We talked about that a lot, yes. And a lot of people are getting grants, and it's not, if you get one, I'm butthurt because I didn't get it. There's right. We're all collaborating now, and I think that's really, really powerful.
We're indigenizing the way we work together, shedding that colonial construct that pits us against each other. We're figuring exactly. out how to collaborate, work together in a more indigenous way to best serve our people.
Well, Robert Pinigigi, I always enjoy our conversations, always. And this is always mm-hmm. fun to catch up. You know, we don't know where we're going. We used to, like, really plan what we're doing, but it was really organic today, and it's good.
It saves me a ton of time not preparing for this.
Hey, that was Robert Lilligren, and we're saving him tons of time. Director of Native American Community Clinic Institute. We'll be right back.
Stay with us.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hey, Cudigy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Line 3, treaty violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pinigigi, and thank you for your support.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, you're not alone. Stronghearts Native Helpline can help you through these difficult and uncertain times. Stronghearts Helpline is a free 24/7 confidential domestic dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 844-762-8483 or by clicking on the chat now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh! Hey, that was good. That was good. Hey, I want to introduce Wendy, who talks about our sacred animals, and this is our sacred animals section. And as you know, our relatives have hooves, tails, wings,
all kinds of stuff,
fins, mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff. But this is a thing we've been doing for 4 years, and it's just awesome. And so, take it away, Wendy.
Yeah, thanks. And for the last 4 years, I've always had something to talk about. So that's the good thing. So there's mm-hmm. always good things to talk about animals, and there's also sad things. But we need to know about the sad things so we can change them. So that's how we have to look at it. But my name is Hanaji Hihani, and that means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. So thank you, Curtis, as always. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And so it was my pleasure to do that. And today, I figured since it's Veterans Day, I'd like to just talk about our veterans and how dogs could help them. Right? Because a lot of, Veterans have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and it really affects them negatively. And I don't know what the statistics right now is. I could probably Google it really quick, but still, veterans, are committing suicide just daily. So it is a really big problem. But, a pet can make anybody happy, but pet ownership can be especially helpful for veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Many veterans returning home from overseas have experienced horrible situations that later cause PTSD. Many different types of therapy can help treat the flashbacks, anxiety, depression, numbness, nightmares, and other symptoms that characterize PTSD. While traditional therapy can be extremely beneficial, some veterans have difficulty, accessing those in the VA system or difficulty admitting that they even need therapy. It's important to seek out professional help for PTSD, but veterans may also want to consider getting a pet. Psychology researchers have started to recognize the therapeutic benefits of owning a dog. No matter if it's a Pomeranian or a pit bull, adopting a dog can be surprisingly helpful for veterans with PTSD. And here are five ways that dogs can turn your life around. And I know that there are some organizations out there. Again, I'd have to look them up. I thought we had one that we talked about once before that helped veterans get dogs, like help them, adopt dogs.
Yeah,
and it doesn't have to be like a trained therapy dog. It could be just a dog from a shelter. But the first thing that they say is that, get active. Dogs can help get you out of the house, get active, and to meet new people. Depression and anxiety can make veterans want to stay cooped up inside, but that only lets this condition get worse. Dogs need a lot of exercise, which is the perfect reason for owners to get out of the house. The act of simply leaving the house can boost your mood, but getting exercise in the process is also a great way to fight depression. So that's fantastic. And rebuild trust, right? Dog ownership help those living with PTSD build trust. Dogs are loyal and always there for you. Because the ability to trust is often damaged by PTSD, knowing you could depend on your dog can help you learn to trust people again, too. Give more love. Dogs bring out feelings of affection, and they love unconditionally. A lot of people with PTSD are ashamed of their condition or the way it affects their interactions with other people. Having a bad day can push loved ones away, but a dog will always be there. Number four, transition to civilian life. Dogs can be trained and they also take orders well. This is especially helpful for veterans who are used to giving orders. This can also, having a dog to train can give veterans the opportunity to use their command skills in a constructive way. Five, feel protective. Dogs make you feel safe and protective. Protected. Nightmares, traumatic flashbacks, anxiety, and depression from PTSD can make you feel vulnerable. Dogs are always by your side, reminding you that you're not alone. Larger dogs, such as German Shepherds, can also protect you, even if you're never in a situation where that's necessary. It's a comforting feeling. And I know even our little dog, like Wanda, who's a little Shih Tzu, she's very protective anyway. But this article came for veterans, vehiclesforveterans.org. So they also could help you with
Pups for Patriots.
Is that the name of it? Thank you for looking that up. Pups for Patriots. So if you know somebody, a veteran who is living with PTSD, you could have them look up Pups for Patriots, service dogs for veterans. It's an application that you fill out. So I think that's really
there's something important else too on the top of that too.
Yeah, let's see here. I'll click on it. But I think it's really important to help our veterans. They've done so much for us. Yeah, for some veterans coming home to the To be a civilian is only the beginning.
You wanted
of another
to say Sicilian.
to coming up. Yeah. So I did want to just bring that up today to talk about the veterans and how animals can help you. Anybody who has depression or, you know, mental illness, animals can help you with so many emotional problems. So I really, really encourage veterans and other people who have PTSD of any kind or depression to get a dog, and even cats. Cats are any type of animal. Anytime you have to take care of something or just worry about something other than yourself or put something else before yourself gives you a sense of betterness, right, Robert? And
yeah, you know, and that's you know, it kind of goes back to what you were saying. And a lot of people that are were in that camp and that are homeless are veterans too. So
that's
it goes
right,
hand in
they
hand
were.
With you talking about their companion, their relative, their what mm-hmm. we like to call in the English language their dog, but
their family, really, yeah. And like Robert Lilligren said, you know. They put that before housing, you know. Okay, it's freezing outside, but they'd rather stay outside with their dog and you know, battle the elements with their dog. So
yeah.
I really feel like it is. So, yeah, so we invite everybody out on November 18th to the Old Dayton's. We'll be there. Our store is opening. Native Roots Trading Post. I still can't say it without a problem. It's at 700.
Who named that?
I know. 700. We just have to get used to saying it over and over again. 700 Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis, and it's inside the Old Dayton's, and we have lots of
and it's natives
really nice
supporting
stuff.
Natives in a good way, mm-hmm. and really getting true native art there to our relatives mm-hmm. all over Turtle Island, mm-hmm. you know, and completing the medicine wheel with our black brothers or white brothers or yellow mm-hmm. brothers and, of course, us red brothers, which are in the medicine wheel.
Yeah, we have all kinds of stuff, lots of good Christmas gifts. We have candles and scarves and drums and art and, gosh, I can't even think of everything.
I think I might be drawn, too. I want to start drawing.
Well, I have some paint and canvases, so yeah. Go for it.
Yeah, I have plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Plenty of time. Beautiful. Pini Gigi, sorry with Ogama, with the technical difficulties.
Sorry about that, Ogama.
And Pini Gigi, and thank you to Robert Lilligren, as always. And, of course, you, Wendy, thank you for everything. I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to this show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which you stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier. Stop Line 3. Please get vaccinated.